So your father then came...
Wait, hold on. Hold a minute. Tape one, side two, continuing our interview with Mrs. Heppner.
Again, just to elaborate a little bit more about how your father, his mother then, and rest of his family came. How many members did the family have?
I have many aunts and uncles. There are about 10. So there was really a very large family.
And they all settled in New York?
And they all settled in New York. And then most of them moved to the Pittsburgh area. The 11-year-old that came with him did stay in New York City. And my father and aunt were very close, and we did visit them very frequently.
Tell me more about the trip to Russia. And was your uncle still living there?
No, my uncle was the oldest.
Yes.
And he actually was killed by the Stalin people, but he and his wife had 5 children. The reverse of ours, they had 4 daughters and a son. And so, of course, in order to trace them, the only one that could be traced was the son, whose name would have remained the same. When my father came to the United States, inadvertently, his name was changed, and so we are the only Shore relatives. The rest of the family is Shure, and so it was the Shure family that was traced, and my brother was able to find that son and connect with him by phone and letter. Originally, there were a number of Russians in the Pittsburgh community who helped with the communications, and then eventually Jack and Barbara made the trip to Russia about 4 or 5 years ago, and actually met with the family.
Beautiful
experience.
How was your Spanish here?
In the United States, it's S-C-H-E-R-R. In Russia, it's S-H-E-R. At least that's our translation of it.
And the
cousin. So there now is a large family in Russia. So they decided to go back, and they went back this past year to visit people who lived much closer to the Pacific.
We were talking about the second visit to Russia when Jack and Barbara went back.
Yeah, you really ought to get them to tell that story and to tape it, because the second visit was traumatic. Not the visit with the relatives, but their experience in getting out of Russia, in which their plane left without them, and they weren't quite sure what they were going to be doing. So, but I think that's really their story to tell.
But you said they did bring over a cousin.
They brought a cousin to visit.
To visit.
This was the first cousin and his daughter, and Jack and Barbara took them on a tour of the country. They took them to the West Coast and had an absolutely wonderful visit with them, so that they met many members of the family.
And you also said your mother's family was from the same, this is Siberia,
yes.
So it's different.
Yeah.
Okay. They never met up with anybody from your mother's side?
No.
Tell me something about your school days. You went to your elementary school?
We moved around a little bit when I was quite young, so that I went to several different schools. I've been to Rogers and Morningside, but I ended up at Fulton in about the fourth grade when we lived on Avondale, and I went through Fulton and then Peabody. Both school experiences were exceptional. Fulton was a perfectly marvelous school. I had an excellent basic education. Teachers who really cared and who really drilled us, and it was a lovely school experience.
I went there.
Did you really? So, really great. And the same at Peabody. I really had teachers that cared. I was very fortunate that I was put in a special class in the ninth grade, so that in a year and a half we did 2 years of work, but it meant that we had the same group of students going through that experience. And again, it was exceptional because it was a new experiment, and they, I assume, put their top teachers in that situation. And so I made many close friends and from that small group.
Was there a name to the course?
Not that I know of.
Can you remember any of the names that you can toss out for us?
Well, we recently had our 50th reunion, and Harold Ober, who used to sing on the radio, came back for the reunion. I also had, you know, a number of people who stayed in the Pittsburgh area who have remained very close friends. Jean Busa Simon, Shirley Marcus, and I can't remember her married name. There were just a number of people that were a part of that. And during those years, I began to volunteer. I couldn't wait to go to camp, and at 16 I became a camp counselor at Emma Kaufman Camp. For 1 month they let me come without paying me or my paying, which was how I got there. And it was a most marvelous experience. I loved every minute of it and remained a counselor at Emma Farm for 4 years, and then became a counselor at Laura Y for 4 more years. So that I was a counselor for a long time and knew, as a result, many of the children of the area who have since grown and have their own children.
What was your specialty in camp?
It was really very general. I began just as an assistant counselor, and then learned a great deal from many of the people there about the out-of-doors, often led the camp songs.
But you did your mother's talent?
You did do everything. No, I never had her talent. She had an absolutely magnificent voice. I had a very little voice. I could carry a tune, but never had her voice. And then I, as a result of the contacts that I made at camp, the supervisors and the people who ran the camps, I began to lead clubs at the Irene Kaufman settlement and the YMWHA, which was part of the influence that led me to social work. In addition, as I mentioned earlier, I did teach Sunday school as well. So it was a very busy, active life through my teen years. And then I went on to the University of Pittsburgh and got my degree in psychology, my undergraduate degree, continued right on in the master's program and got my master's of social work in 1950.
During this time, were you involved in any way politically?
No, I really wasn't. I was certainly aware of politics, but my involvement in human services was really so time-consuming. Plus, of course, my social life. I mean, that was part of growing up, too.
Oh, yes.
This was the period when I was at Pitt that it was toward the end of the war. There were still a great many soldiers based around, and then dating. So it was a very busy time. But I was never really involved politically.
Can you tell me something about your experiences in college and in graduate school? Were there any special outstanding events that you remember?
Everything about Pitt was outstanding because I enjoyed my undergraduate years so very much. I was in a number of the honorary societies.
Which, for example?
As a freshman, it was Quain's. As a sophomore, I think it was Quo Vadis, in which you studied the nationality rooms. I think I was president of my class. This was a women's government at that time, in my junior year. And then in my senior year, I was president of Mortarboard.
That's quite an honor.
And our Mortarboard class still gets together on an irregular basis. We have one member, Sally Oleon, who lives in New York City. And when Sally comes to town, as many of us who can get together for lunch, we try to meet. So our Mortarboard days live on. Then in graduate school, it was necessary to have a field placement in addition to classes. It's a two-year program. The first year I was placed at the YWCA in East Liberty, on Spar Street, which no longer is there. And the second year, I was at the YMWHA, which was a wonderful experience because I had as my supervisor there Rose Dobroff, who has gone on to tremendous fame in the New York City area as an advocate for older people. And my first job then, out of graduate school, was at the Y.
Doing what?
Initially, I was supervisor of a young adult program. After the war, there were many young adult clubs. We don't see those today. But these were young men especially who had come back from service and needed a support system, really. And there were a number of active young adult clubs. I then became the youth worker and helped establish programs for children.
What kind of programs?
Well, one of the things that we did, some of them were after school, some of them were day camp, but one of the things that the Y did in those early days was establish a Saturday afternoon program. And that was unheard of at that time, that the Y would have anything on the Sabbath. But Mr. Passamanic, who was the executive director, had gone to visit Israel and found that they were attending soccer games on Saturday afternoon. And so he came back and we established a children's program for Saturday afternoons, which was very successful. There had always, not always, but there had been a program for boys in the gym for a number of years that was done without any publicity. This was then added with publicity, and as long as it was in the afternoon, none of the rabbis in town seemed to mind, and they seemed to really be very pleased that there would be a program for children.
I'm bringing back my childhood.
Set my children there, that's right. About this time, I suspect you met your husband, or where did you meet your husband? Let me ask it that way.
I met my husband originally because he was a friend of one of the counselors at Emma Kaufman Camp.
A male friend.
We then met again a couple of years later when we were both counselors at Laurel Y Camp.
And his first name is?
Is Robert. It's Betty and Bob. Like the old radio program that most people don't remember. And it was a wonderful way to have a courtship because we saw each other every day and we really got to know each other. And when we came back from camp, we started dating. And I was in graduate school at that time and not at all interested in marriage. I was going to be a career person. But we did get married in 1951. And Bob also was born and raised in Pittsburgh. And his family was very active in the community. His grandmother and his mother and aunts and uncles lived on Stevenson Street. And my current office is right off of Stevenson Street, so that when I come down there every morning, I think about the Glicks that lived where the fire hall is now. And the Forbes School across the street where they went to school.
You said they were very active, for example, his mother and grandmother, you said were very active.
His grandmother was very involved in the Ladies Hospital Aid Society, in the establishment, really, at that time of Montefiore Hospital. And there was a home up on the bluff for people that were new immigrants in the community, and I know that his grandmother actually took people into her own home to when they first came to Pittsburgh so that they would have a place to stay that would be kosher, that kind of thing.
What was his grandmother's name?
Do you know, I can't think of her first name.
Glick.
The Glick family.
And his mother's name then?
Was Florence. And Florence married his father in the, I think, the early 20s. They were subsequently divorced, and so Bob was not very involved with the Heppner side of his family. But we have subsequently gotten back in touch and have a couple of cousins, and he still has two aunts that are alive, not in the Pittsburgh area, however. We just visited one in Sedona this past year.
Did he have brothers or sisters?
He has one sister, and we are just back from North Carolina, where we visited his sister and brother-in-law.
And his sister's name?
Is Marion Rockstrow, and her husband Ed Rockstrow. And they have two children, Margie, who lives in Seattle, and a son that lives in Atlanta, and he has his father's name. He's young Eddie. He is married and has two children. Margie is married to David, but they do not have any children at this time.
Tell me a little bit more about your courtship, the things that, when you were no longer counselors at camp, what was your husband doing?
Bob was job hunting. He had finished school and...
In what area?
He's a chemist. And took a job at Mellon Institute in water pollution abatement. And it was a lucky choice because it was before we became so environmentally conscious and really blossomed as a field. At that time, it was really very, very minute. His program was sponsored by Copper's Company, which, as you are aware, is no longer in existence in the Pittsburgh area. Is no longer in existence, period. Pieces of it are now available, and there is something called Copper's, but it's not really the old Copper's Company. And they built a new research center in the Monroeville area, and Bob went to work, moved from Mellon Institute. He was out in Verona for a little while, and then moved to the new summer, what they called Somerville Park, in Monroeville, and was working in the area of water and air pollution for a long time, and then they divided that, and he became manager of the water pollution laboratory, so that all of the Copper's plants that had to use water in any way or get rid of water in any way, all of the plants were monitored by this lab in Monroeville, so that he was aware of what was happening all around the country.
That's most interesting. Great.
When Copper's was purchased in a hostile bid, they moved the lab, and subsequently they were, the employees were given an opportunity to retire early, and Bob took that opportunity because some of his benefits were going to change and the conditions were just very different. So he did retire a little earlier than he had planned. It's been about 7 or 8 years that he's been retired.
Fiona, your first home together then, was that in Penn Hills? You mentioned that.
Right. Well, our first, when we were first married, we lived with my mother and father on Heberton Street, and then purchased a home in Penn Hills. Right, in the Eastwood section of Penn Hills, which was the closest to the city of Pittsburgh, because I was not a suburbanite and I didn't want to go any farther than I absolutely had to. I grew up in the city of Pittsburgh and feel very comfortable as an urban person. I like the amenities.
End of tape 1, side 2, to be continued.